Here we go. Cardiff Carnival 25th anniversary project. Steve Fletcher, interviewer. Nigel Watson, interviewee. The venue, Swicker Office. The date, Sunday the 19th of October 2014. Nigel, for the record, would you spell your full name, please?
N-I-G-E-L, James, J-A-M-E-S, Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N.
Thanks very much indeed. Before I founded Swicker back in 1990, I had the most fabulous and transformative cultural experience with a fabulous group called Theatre Taliesin Wales. Nigel was the founder of that group and artistic co-director. Please tell us more about Theatre Taliesin Wales. Who were they and what did they do?
Right. Well, the first thing to establish is that I founded the company with a dear friend and colleague who is still a dear friend and colleague, Stuart Cox, who has been living in Mexico for 13 years. I'm very profoundly pleased to say that we're working on a project together in Cuba at the moment. That we had worked together, we'd met and worked together in the 70s in Triple Action Theatre, and then we'd worked together under the first company I formed called Theatre Saga here. And we had wanted to look initially at simply developing a one-man show that we would jointly script and that I would perform and Stuart would direct. And so initially it was planned to be, in fact, a double project in Sri Lanka, that we would mount a project about the Welsh shaman and nonconformist William Price, and that we would do a children's show to go with that. And we wanted to explore the very fertile and rich Sri Lankan mask tradition. Neither of us had worked very extensively with masks, so there was a technical aspect to this project. We got quite some way towards a residency in the University of Colombo. British Council was supportive. And then the Civil War broke out ferociously once again, and the Foreign Office was saying, we can't offer you any kind of protection. So the project price went on the back burner, and we thought we'd developed for children, and we came across a retelling of a collection of very ancient Indian fables about a character called Dr. Bidpai. The stories were from a collection called the Panchatantra, which means the five treatises, and go back to Buddhist times before Christ. And a good claim can be made for them that these stories have travelled in one form or another, because they're parables like Aesop involving talking animals and so on around the world. So we developed this as a children's show, and then decided that we added additional material and it became a family show. And then by reorientating the material, something for adults, and toured widely, played in all manner of places, lots of schools, lots of art centres and village halls, all kinds of venues. And then we had the good fortune to have contact with the Bharatiya Vidyabhavan, the Institute of Indian Culture in West London, where most unusually, in India, classical musicians do not play as accompanists for theatre or dance shows. It simply isn't done. It's not part of the protocol. Other musicians do that work, and very fine they are. But on this occasion, due to our contacts and due to the chemistry being right, a sitar teacher and the tabla teacher, both extremely fine players in their own right, agreed to part compose, part improvise a score for the performance. And so, in a way, the apogee of the performance was to tour with this and, where possible, a double bill with a short concert an interval, and then A Word in the Stargazer's Eye was the title that we made. So that had a life in its various forms of something like 5 years. And then after that, we thought, well, we've had a very good response, positive response. Clearly, I'm not ready to do another one-man show. So we started to think about the possibilities of working, given our passion for the Indian performing arts, with the variety of Asian communities on our doorstep in Cardiff. And the most advanced kind of community manifestation of that was Samaj, a cultural centre, a cultural and religious centre in Grangetown. And we spent a year really supporting ourselves by other means, having at some point decided that we would give to promote A Word in the Stargazer's Eye, we would promote ourselves and give ourselves a company name, and we talked about various options. And I had always been attracted by the shamanic nature of this legendary stroke actual bard with poems from the 6th century, but legends about whom existing from the Middle Ages, certainly, perhaps they were much older, that turn constantly on the idea of transformation. That's what I mean when I say shamanic, that humans turn into animals and vice versa. And transforming is what performers do to varying degrees all the time, in whatever mode they're operating. So this established, first of all, the kind of Welsh focus of the company and, as I say, led us to spend a year negotiating with the Gujarati community and largely from Kutch in western Gujarat about making a production with members of the community in the Samaj. So that took place in, the company started in summer 84, and in 1986 we, using the Irish and Welsh material at the root of the European Tristan and Iseult myth, Tristan and Isolde, as it's most widely known through Wagner, we used this material as a classic eternal triangle between an old king and his young bride and a young lover and other adventures with dragons and so on. So together with a professional core and a multilingual production that we rough scripted what there was in English and staged together with something like 30 to 40 community participants of all ages. And this production created quite a stir. I think it was fair to say it's the first of this kind in Wales. And we made a BBC radio documentary about it. There was a significant swell of interest in the ideas behind the premises behind the project, that we were using Welsh or pan-Celtic narrative material of a sufficiently universal character to, as a magnet, to bring people around with a story that they could relate to.
And obviously that was the first of a trilogy of Indo-Celtic community plays. It was after that first play that you came, and I think you actually visited me in London where I was working at the time. You explained about the success of Tristan and Iseult, the first Indo-Celtic community play. Certainly your passion for interculturalism and celebration and the intergenerational nature of the vision that you laid before me when I was working in London was so strong that I felt I better join you in this. And I relocated to Cardiff in 1987. And well, over to you. What happened next?
Well, we were, of course, very gratified by the warmth of the response to the project, and clearly the ideas that were almost assumed not in terms of simply of being citizens of the world, but of bringing together artistic techniques, Welsh clogging and Gujarati folk dance, scales from older Celtic music and Indian scales. The aesthetic issues were, because they were practical ones, how shall we do this, where shall somebody stand, how shall we make this particular kind of music together, were the primary practical questions and problems and challenges that working artists had to face. But with the kind of looking at the documentary, the film footage, and trying to think through some of the resonances that the production gave rise to, I have to put it that way round, that the practical aesthetic challenges were first, because those we couldn't shelve, you had to deal with on a day-to-day basis. That was the nature of the work. So then the wider resonances of what the work might represent came after, on reflection, and thought, well, we've done this. People seem to think it's a good thing to do, and they enjoyed the show and took its collaborative, celebratory spirit to heart. We should go on and do another. How do we extend, expand, develop, mutate the idea without simply repeating ourselves and not boxing ourselves into some kind of creative ghetto? So, as you say, Steve, with your workaholic presence, helping to put the company on a more sensible organizational and administrative and financial backing, we began to think about how we should extend it, as I said, and the issue then of perhaps bringing a company from India to work with a core of Wales-based performers of whatever ethnicity and the community, which wasn't closed. It wasn't open only to Gujaratis, but the centre itself was very open. Anybody could come. That was a basic condition that we set down for the collaboration, and I don't think there was any real difficulty with that. There was certainly a long process of, quite understandably, because this was a first, and because I believe I'm right in saying that the City Council had turned down an application to financially support the building of the centre. So it was funded simply from collections from the local community. And so what became a centre then, to some degrees, became a fortress. Not only because of elements of gross racism and graffiti and so on, but simply because of the tendency for a community to turn in upon itself if there is not an active, warm welcome from the host community. So we broached the issue with the community elders, and they thought it was a good idea. And so Stuart spent a time in the spring of 88, I think I'm right in saying, or 87, and I in the autumn of 87, looking at traditional folk theatres in both North and Southern India. I think it was very valuable for us to be able to draw some comparative picture of the state of folk theatre in India, predominantly rural folk theatre. In retrospect, it seemed terrifyingly obvious that we should have brought a Gujarati company, so that the community would have been able to speak to the performers. And whilst that's what we did, it's one of those things that research throws up. The obvious isn't clear until you've been round the houses. You don't know what your own front door looks like until you've been into the next street. So following that research, arrangements were made for the predominant form in Gujarat called Bavai, which a company had never been outside India before, to bring something like 15, 16, 17 people, a synthesis of two troupes together with their supporters and from the administrative office from the National Theatre of India in Bombay to bring a troupe to Wales, to make a new production, to tour shows of their own, and to create as big a splash as we could, as an example of a living, vibrant, non-classical traditional art form that at its grassroots level was still hugely popular, which meant that companies, Babai companies, toured in rural Gujarat. They would arrive at a village, perhaps at the weekend, and would play a series of very brief extracts, trailers, from their repertoire, which was huge, of both ballad operas and sung plays, spoken plays, and the villagers would choose which pieces they wanted to see. So it was like cinema trailers. So this was an entirely fascinating tradition, a 600- and 700-year-old tradition. Terms of age that we're used to thinking about classical theatre in Asia, no, in Japan and so on, but that had survived, that had stayed the same by changing, as many populist and folk traditions do, by continually updating and changing their material. So they came to Wales, where this time we chose the narrative material of Twmsion Catti, the Welsh bandit, to outline a problem that was unquestionably a problem in Wales in the 18th century, and that still is in India, where fathers and mothers have lots of sons, and they divide the farms down into smaller and smaller dimensions and areas and units that become economically unviable, and youngest sons simply go off and they either go to the city or they become outlaws. They live by robbing and stealing because farming is no longer an option. So we developed this production with a greater degree of community participation. There was a great deal of communal pride in these artistic cousins coming from India and showing off, if you like, to Britain some of the cultural riches of the state of Gujarat, Sarat and Kutch in particular. And they toured their own shows. And we did a number of workshops with the London International, with LIFT, the International Festival for People, and BBC Wales made a TV documentary. And so it made the event, made a bigger splash as we hoped it would. And by then, I would think we were sort of making the work and doing the administration, but also trying to promote an active agenda of the virtues and the value of interculturalism, of people simply opening to others through participation in projects like this. So it was a spoken and sung in English, Welsh and Gujarati, or in Kutchi, Sarasti, piece which again produced a very positive reaction. Bigger waves, I would say. I think that I have to say that we had many supporters from the Welsh language community, but I think there were also, it's fair to say, naysayers who found this agenda a muddying of waters that they wished only to exist between Welsh speakers and English speakers, and who, in other words, were simply wishing to edit out the reality of the multi-ethnic communities of Swansea, Cardiff, Newport, and a little bit in Connors Quay in northeastern Wales, that this didn't simply figure in their picture of Wales. We understand the kind of cultural breakdown and talk about one individual's sense of what Wales means to them, what their Wales is. And I was naive enough to be shocked, I think, by some of the arguments, sometimes heated arguments, that I think in all soberness that reeked of straightforward fascism. I need to say that people who were saying these people should simply be deported or given the opportunity at best to learn to speak fluent Welsh in 1 year. All those failing some kind of test should be deported. I heard this from scores of people. So it was some group of people's notion of an agenda at that time. So I'm simply wanting to draw attention to the fact that this reasonably enough, ideas, transformative ideas, are never received smoothly, and there were people who were consciously against such an agenda.
The trilogy continued and grew apace. I remember in particular, as we moved on to the third play, that the participatory element and some of the tasters that Taliesin, some of the things that Theatre Taliesin Wales were bringing to Cardiff for the first time, you know, the whole idea of a multicultural community orchestra. I can remember organising the first ever Ghanaian drumming sessions as part of these projects. I think I am right when I suspect the roots of Samba Galés are probably in there as well, as we began to explore community percussion in lots of different ways. So take us on to community play number three, because
your observations are absolutely acute, Steve, in that in and around and after Tumshon Katty, we were all very much well aware of simply the time it took at least a year to develop the various strands to make beginning such a production feasible, organisational, financial, particularly organisational. But at the ground level, that is to say in South Cardiff, we wanted to try to push a little bit or expand out from the Samaj in organising events in South Cardiff or anywhere really, that would function on their own right, but also hopefully feed into the larger shows, which would make community involvement that much more real, that much fuller, and that much more enjoyable. So we ran cross-cultural music concerts in Chapter, we ran a community orchestra, we did projects in schools, including two that I remember with great and profound pleasure in a school for the deaf and hearing impaired in Sully, one with a South Asian and white Welsh team, and one with an African Caribbean group, both particularly percussion and drum bass, that was received, I have truly to say, ecstatically by the school, the children, many of whom were resident, and the head teacher. And it was a great source of sorrow that we couldn't, when the money ran out, that we couldn't carry those on. That they're some of the projects that I feel proudest of. So we were looking for opportunities to run dance classes, drama classes, through the year to widen the net, to build the links of the web, to connect more people with more people through art. So that was a kind of significant shift, which meant that we were working locally through the year on those kinds of projects, taking on people, because you can't do everything, running projects, one in a Welsh language junior school, specifically in relation to some of the things I've just been saying. I think that expansion of activity is an important growth and development, probably between the second and third of this. I'd call them a triad more than a trilogy, because they weren't directly thematically linked, but they were politically linked by the underlying premises of our intercultural premise or premises. And so the third piece, playing fast and loose with the legend of Madog, the 13th century Welsh prince who sailed away from North Wales and allegedly discovered America, and that there is a memory with the Mandan indigenous American people just west of the Mississippi of blue-eyed and blonde-haired ancestors, that we involved not only other Asian groups, the Punjabi Bhangra group of young people, and an African Caribbean young girls or teenage girls dance group, as well as, you were saying, Steve, a sort of cross-cultural percussion group. So we were looking at all kinds of resources, and we had a dear colleague of mine whose early death saddens me as I speak of it. Elwood Lewis, where else in the world would you have a minister who leads a double life as an actor? I'm sure there are elsewhere, but it's a peculiarly kind of Welsh set of circumstances. And one of our South Asian supporters playing Queen Elizabeth singing Jailhouse Rock at the end of part one. So that's what I mean by saying playing fast and loose with cultural references and creating a kind of playground where men could play women, anybody could be anybody, by adopting costumes, by mutual agreement, by a set of circumstances, affinities, playground rules of saying, this is just like a children's dressing room where here are the costumes, let's try on what we like and see what kind of roles we might care to play out. And so in that, the third piece was a promenade. The previous piece had been two-sided and four-sided seating in the rectangular samaj, but Madog was a promenade piece. The audience stood and we simply acted amongst them. And the premise that of anybody could be Welsh, if, as the historian who wrote the book, Gwyneth Williams, said, if you make his view as a Marxist, internationalist, if you make a commitment to Wales, what's the problem with being Welsh? A view that we espoused, and very glad that he came and said a few words on the opening night of the show and was 100% behind the project of making it globally available. We speak largely in the current times about, on the one hand, how colossal theoretical sums of money pass in a nanosecond around the globe. They're simply noughts on a computer screen. But the movement of peoples, at the moment the focus is on Africa and the Mediterranean and people drowning in boats, globalization produces changes, some of which are difficult and challenging to deal with, as our ideas about what our work meant and what it might mean and what its potential significance it might have, that it was a response to changing circumstances that in the intervening years have changed even further. This movement of peoples has not stopped. It is simply one of the most significant features of the world we live in. Like it or not, that is the case. And so I think that we hope artists have their antennae out and are looking at social trends. So whilst as artists I wouldn't pretend that our priority wasn't with solving the aesthetic problems that we set ourselves, we were at, in and of the same time, and especially discussions with you, Steve, continually sifting and re-sifting and thinking about how are people who are opposed to this, what might they think? Was this simply bigotry or fear of change, which we all recognise in ourselves, of the people who came and said, I couldn't recognise my own country at one of our performances, at which we have to reflect on the kind of subjective nature of what, or confusing the subjective and the kind of officially approved view of Wales that you largely see at the Eisteddfod, for example. It's one picture of Wales. I'm not against it, it's not illegitimate, but it's not the only one. And it's that sense that many projections and images overlap, conflict. Yes, they do conflict, but many overlap. And that is the kind of kaleidoscopic social situation we were in then, and we were hoping the work would reflect.
So what seems to be quite clear is, in terms of Swicker's origins, and again, you know, the birth of Cardiff Carnival, that Theatre Taliesin Wales, certainly for me, was a fabulous eye-opener, and that some of the central tenets that I took and helped make the foundation for Swicker were the interculturalism, the openness of spirit, the importance of involving and being inclusive and accessible, and probably most important, because these were fabulous, groundbreaking works which still stand the test of time today, which was that the upbeat and ultimately life-affirming and celebratory nature of what Theatre Taliesin was doing. The come-down for the, you know, hundreds who took part or watched, particularly the participants at the end of a 10-week making period for the theatre, was massive. And so it shone a beacon as to what might be possible and could be possible in addition to all the great work that Taliesin was doing. So we're going to return to this conversation in a couple of weeks. Nigel, can I thank you very much indeed for that?
You're
that
most welcome, Steve. And I'd just like to conclude at length, not too great a length, by simply saying that even though it was difficult for us at the time, I think that the growth, my view of the growth of Swicker is simply that I think, like all good work in any form in the performing arts, somehow, if it's localized, if it's based in a great spirit of place, generates further ideas which ripple out. And in terms of our, you know, there were three of us really, the organization couldn't sustain the amount of work that people wanted to do. And so that we split the company in two and thought that that would be the best way forward to promote a specifically grassrooted community events program that could garner a great deal more money, whilst we looked at perhaps working abroad or elsewhere, where people said, well, why don't you come and do something with us? It didn't work out for Taliesin, partly for health reasons. And I should say that many people working in new work, experimental modes of performance, groundbreaking, there's often a great health strain because three people did eight people's work for a long time. And I don't wish to be in any way mawkish, but this is true of so many organisations. So the idea of modest financial remuneration to round-the-clock working, easy to shrug at, but it should be remembered that these things don't happen without a certain level of obsessiveness by those people involved, and it takes its toll. So I'm absolutely delighted to go on the record to say that I congratulate Steve on his, 30 years?
25
of Swicker, and that the carnival mode that he chose seems to me the absolutely correct one to maximise all the kind of potential creativities of its participants. When I was talking about a room full of a children's room full of costumes and masks and anything can be anything that could expand everybody's individual creativity. So I wish the company, and if as long as he wants it, another 25 years, if he wants. Heartiest congratulations.
Thank you very much. We're equally cursed and blessed by that, I think. Take care.